Welcome to Wow What a Week hashtag Politrics. Winter is arriving, but politics always involves shady moves in dark corners, cloudy legislation, and hazy statements. A beacon of light helping us navigate through all of this is Politrics with Butsang Mui Lua. Brother man, welcome back.
Thanks, Big Doc. You know, this, I like what they call in the industry, Big Doc. That sounds big. And good morning to the viewers as well.
Yes, sir.
It's good to be back on set.
Let's get straight into it. Let's go to Hammanskraal. Who would have thunk that in 2023 would have a cholera outbreak? In fact, I was watching a Tsidi Madia's podcast.
Yes.
And she was chatting to former President Mbeki. And in that podcast, President Mbeki talks about how, I don't know if I can ask people to vote for my party right now. Because of governance lack, we can't even provide clean water in Hammanskraal. Let's talk about that.
You know, Fresh, it is not even governance. Governance is too far. It's on basic services,
yes.
Basic commodities that are enshrined in the constitution of this country, but also commodities and services that the ANC as the liberation movement had promised the people.
Sure.
You know, I vividly recall I was living in Attridgeville that time, the 1994 billboards of the ANC, vote ANC for clean water, free education, electricity and free housing. That billboard still, you know, in my mind. And I think President Mbeki is like all other ANC members and followers and supporters find themselves in a very tight corner to go and convince people to continue voting for the ANC due to the failure of the former liberation movement, the leading political party in the country, to can actually not even invent any way to continue rendering services that were very basic, whether it was in the homeland states, whether it was in the Bantustan states or in the former partition. I mean, water, especially in places like Hammanskraal, which is part of the biggest metro in Africa. I listened to a certain advocate, Mwafrita Wamaileza. He's originally from Hammanskraal, and he's representing, he's the leader of the community there. And the people of Hammanskraal are saying, 15, 16 years back, we had clean water here before these tanks were, you know, introduced, before the municipality failed to render those services. And now, as a country, if you hear the news, you know, this past week, it is no longer only in Hammanskraal. There's an outbreak of cholera. There's a case reported in Limpopo of a Zimbabwean national, but it's contained. There's cases reported in the northwest. There has been water problems in the northwest. In Gauteng now, in Limpopo, it's going to go to the Free State and the Eastern Cape very soon. But I've got a completely different view regarding this.
Yeah.
Despite a failure to render services, I think there's an element of corruption in this whole process. And Hammanskraal has showed us.
How much is it costing for water tankers to bring water in all the time? Because already there's a business there.
A very big business.
Meaning it's not in the interest of those people for water systems to be fixed.
If you look at, you know, having a proper infrastructure, and I'm not an engineer, but proper infrastructure to can take water from the reservoirs around Tshwane, which are supplying other areas of Tshwane, into Hammanskraal, I can bet it will be cheaper to can have infrastructure, to have pipes that is taking water to the people of Hammanskraal. Unlike having somebody who will have to have, first of all, a truck that is equipped and set properly to can transport clean, fresh water for human consumption. The second element is those trucks, when they transport water to those areas, there has to be tanks. And you know, Jojo will feel very proud that we are calling them Jojo tanks, because Jojo is a brand.
Yes.
And it could be any other brand. To have these huge water tanks that the municipality will be supplying all over Hammanskraal for the people to can take wheelbarrows and gallons of water to go and take water there. So that whole value chain, it involves quite a lot of money. And again, as somebody said, the comrades and some of these trucks, it has come out. You know, people have provided material evidence. Some people have come up and said, my own family owns that truck. It is not in my name because I work for the municipality, but it's the truck of the family. So municipal employees, they own and they buy these trucks, then they invest in them. But what is worse is then they don't even go and pick up water where they've signed up on the SOP or on the contract with the municipality, they're going to pick up dirty water somewhere. What is worrying is that the government to date have come up and said they can't find any traces of cholera or bacteria in the water. But what water is the government testing?
Were they not testing the tap water in Hammanskraal?
Yes.
Because I heard the minister talking about the water is clean. I heard Mayor Celia Brink say the water is clean.
Testing the water that the municipality knows that it's water that's clean that's going into the tanks is different from what the tankers are delivering to the people when the municipality and officials are there. That's a totally different point.
And surely that is probably where the cholera might be from.
Exactly.
Botsang has zero experience when it comes to water issues, absolutely, water sanitation, etc. But Botsang all of a sudden has a tanker. And it could have been a tanker that was not cleaned and sanitized that must now carry drinking water and then ramakala when people fall sick.
Actually, it has come out that majority of these tankers, they were not initially water-carrying tankers. They were converted into.
You see.
And they were converted into water-carrying tankers. So there's the whole hullabaloo with this whole thing. But again, this is as a result of, one, failure of a government to provide basic services. Secondly, for corruption. But again, the tender process. The tender process is a problem in this country. And tender and contracts of government have always been there. But the fact that political office bearers and public servants are seeing the tender process as a cash cow, you know, it's a living income for some of the people, it has become a problem because it has got out of hand. There is no accountability. There is no monitoring. The government has failed in many years to have what we call health inspectors who would normally go to supermarkets, to shops, to spaza shops in the township. They don't have the capacity. The government says, we don't have the capacity to provide those health inspectors who are supposed to do routine and regular checks. Now imagine we have increased the number of services that require inspectors and we don't have those inspectors. And I think it's a shame, actually, if I was a politician, I'm sitting in government, I'll be very ashamed that we are failing on basic provide.
Yeah, you have one job.
With clean water. What are we doing in this instance? And again, I saw, you know, the big biting between the Democratic Alliance, which is the governance in Tshwane now, the leading, and the ANC pointing fingers at each other. This problem, let me tell you, Fresh, and our viewers, it is 16 years old. It didn't start now with the Democratic Alliance. They've been in, out with the ANC. It's a collective problem. So the government of the day, I don't care who's in power in Tshwane, the government of the day has failed the people of the Republic of South Africa. And again, I also think, you know, when you look at what happened in the last 2-3 weeks, it happened in the Northwest, right? We know of the problem of Giani in Malamulele, of water. 20 years, they've been promised a budget.
A billion rand later
with something that started as 500, you know, million. It's a billion rand later, they still do not have water. So there's an element of corruption, but we must be careful as a nation. We may be going the Eskom way. We may be going a way whereby people will start making noise and talking about privatization of water services. And we should not forget that under Ms. Nomvula Mokonyane, when she was the Minister of Water Affairs, there was a report that came out years back, I think it was around 2016, that shocked the country that 72% of dams and reservoirs that supply clean drinking water to the country, to the nation, are actually privately owned by less than 10% white families. So it's the same as the land question. You know, if more than 70% of land in South Africa is owned by 35% of white families and 72% of reservoirs of water that South Africans consume, it's owned by less than 10% of, you know, white families, you can see where is the privatization going. Those people are sitting and are saying to government, we need to provide clean water, we can provide this, we can improve our services. The price of water will be the same as the price of electricity. It will triple. And who will suffer? The basic person on the street.
Speaking privatization, I was reading about how Eskom privatization is looming, could be looming. How true is that?
This has been in the pipeline. There's been a lot of talk to say partially Eskom must be privatized and so on. If people don't want to believe that Eskom will be privatized, they should look at what has happened with the post office. with the shares of government in Vodacom. They must look at what is happening with Eskom at the moment. They must look at all other issues. The Dinel, part Dinel was at some stage 100% state-owned. Mm. So everything else that has been in the state-owned enterprises, it gradually and slowly being privatized. So we saw it with South African Airways. When South African Airways got privatized, before we go back to Eskom, when South African Airways got privatized or sold, if I may put it that way, it actually costed the director general of state-owned enterprises ministry his job. He's in loggerheads with the minister now because he was against the sale of SA the way it was done. Mm. The man is not saying, don't sell, don't get shares. He said the way it was done, it was improper because the initial sale, it was for Mango. It was not for South African Airways. Mm. Then SA Express. Then suddenly the entire South African Airways, the bigger part. And Eskom is going that route. Gradually and slowly, Eskom is being privatized. Because what they've done, we have heard from the director, the president, the minister, that actually there is corruption happening in Eskom. It's an internal sabotage. We're not supposed to be where we are. But who sabotages is the one who wants to benefit out of that process after. What has happened in the past week was that there's a barometer organization, an NGO, that ran a study. And they had samples of approximately 1,500 people concentrated in some areas to test if they want Eskom to be privatized. And I always say they can use those kind of samples to determine. And they say 59% of South Africans, that's how the report came out, want Eskom to be privatized. But who are those people that were sampled?
Yes.
And how much are they paying for electricity? What access do they have to alternative energy like solars and so forth? I don't think it will be the wise move. Our electricity is already expensive as we talk. It's unreliable and expensive. Imagine if you privatize it. The basic mode of having a business in the private sector is capitalism. It is exploitation and maximizing profit. Nobody's going to take Eskom and privatize it and run it without making maximum profit.
And NGO it. You can't, you know?
But this is how they operate. They use NGOs to cause a havoc, to start suggesting to people, and they will say, this is a credible NGO that is funded by some foundation, of Americans or British, and people will listen more to the NGO than to the government, and therefore let us go the NGO route. But you know what is my challenge there? My challenge is I asked a question in some radio platform yesterday. I said, if we think Eskom will be successful as a private entity, who will be the people at the helm of Eskom? Who will be the board, the executive, the technician? Will those people not be normal South Africans like me and you, engineers, technicians? So are people saying if people serve the government, they are useless? Then when they serve the private sector, they will do the right thing. What makes difference that if there are people in this country at the moment who are capable of running Eskom successfully? And success for me is not only profit, because I'm a consumer. Success is, do we have electricity? Mm-hmm. If we have those people today, where are they? Can they render that service? And Eskom is a state-owned entity. So the salaries are very good there. So it's in competition with the private sector. So we cannot say it's like in the past where people were saying there was no money in government, there's no benefit. Actually, the state-owned enterprises, salary band, it is benchmark along the lines of private companies. So it is not about income. And that's what makes me think that it's an absolute sabotage that people want to maximize profits out of Eskom. And we as a nation, I think we should guard against that because we are going to pay for electricity three or four times than what we are paying now. And some people who have money, they will say, I would rather pay more as long as I have my lights on throughout the day.
Yes.
But what about the men on the street who can afford?
Absolutely.
And that's the challenge we are faced with.
Yeah. Speaking of challenges and being beleaguered, public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane's husband is claiming some comrades said, listen, give us 600,000 rand each and we will make everything go away.
Only 600,000.
Can you imagine?
when we had a minister in the past who claimed to have refused 600 million from the Guptas, and this one wants to settle for 600,000. It's very funny how politics unfolds in this
country. Maybe they want a given amount they know they could get.
Well, I
allegedly.
I saw the police report, the case itself. I had access to it, and the statement of the husband of Advocate Mukabane is very damning, I must say. And he doesn't end just by making statements. He also says he's got recordings of the meeting he had in Gauteng, two meetings, where he recorded the conversation with the lead person. But also there are WhatsApp conversations between the two of them. I still don't understand people who do crime or who do corrupt activity and they still engage in WhatsApps. And so because leave that can
leaving
be
a trail. Leaving a trail. Yes.
So and for me that's what is interesting, what was said on those WhatsApp. The other two people, one of which is the chief whip of the ruling party in parliament, the other person is the ironically the chairperson of that committee. And you must see how Advocate Mkhwebane's husband went on to even detailed. Now smart people, what they did. I'm not smart, but I did that. I went to look on YouTube for the previous recordings in the parliamentary TV. And there's something very important that he's saying there. He is saying people must go and look at a certain period between the engagements or negotiations and the day they dropped the ball. The chairperson was a little bit cordial and warmer and warming up towards Advocate Mkhwebane. I went to look at it. I could see a slight difference. And I thought maybe it's because Advocate Mpofu was doing a good job and the chairperson was seeing the results. But the husband is alleging that, no, it was the time I promised them money. I wanted to raise the cash and I wanted to set a trap for them. But unfortunately, he couldn't raise the cash. And in this instance, he said he kept the advocate in darkness until the last minute. Unlike me and you, who could have had pillow talks, you know, the first day I would have, you know, sold the news to my spouse. But yeah, it's a very sad state of affairs. Let me tell you what this is going to do politically to the country. Advocate Mkhwebane has rights and there are allegations and a case has been opened. You know what does it mean? It's going to delay the case further because now you can't continue with a president. If we are in a fair state of affairs, the chairperson of that committee or hearing must excuse himself until he has been cleared. Remember, this is just an allegation. So the fastest thing they can do is to say, no, chairperson, move, let's have a new person to come and preside over this. But it will delay because the presiding person must now acclimatize him or herself with where the case is.
Almost start from scratch.
Yeah, so this is going to delay the whole process. Another fruitless expenditure after they just secured $4 million for her to proceed. Again, I was also seeing a very smart game here where Ms. Mkhwebane's or Advocate Mkhwebane's husband, this thing happened while they were still searching for $4 million. Now, this is where the strategy and the chess game comes in. So he kept quiet this whole process. Once the money was on the table to say, you may now proceed with the hearing and the case, he comes with damning allegations to say, before we proceed, I have these allegations. October is around the corner. They took over a year to be halfway this case. Do we think they will finish it in the next 4 months? I doubt it. It's going to take another 2 to 3 months for the national speaker of the National Assembly to make a decision on whether the chairperson must recuse herself. And again, there's a chief whip of the ruling party that will be responsible to say, we as the ruling party, the ANC, this is the person we are recommending to can replace the other one if he's being replaced. Now, you are also implicated in that process and you are one who's supposed to make a call in this. A very smart move from the Mkhwebane's, but a very, very bad state of affairs for us as a nation because it's unfair on us as a nation.
Delay tactic or not, can you afford to make such allegations and claims against people and think there'd be no consequences? Let's, for argument's sake, say they're making it all up to buy time.
Yeah.
But can you afford to accuse Botsang of corruption in the name of buying time when you know that Botsang can turn around?
I don't think they are that stupid. Yeah. I don't think they will do that. I think it would have been very dangerous of them because when it comes out that, you know, making an allegation if you don't have evidence, if you don't have people who can come and testify to what transpired. But when a person says, I've got written evidence, I just pray and hope for them the Mkwebanis,
yes,
that the notes or the allegations that are being referred to in the WhatsApp, they actually have meat in them. You know, yes, we can have a conversation, say, let's have tea, let's meet, comrade, for discussing your husband's or your wife's process. Maybe you, as comrades, the people can come and say, no, I was giving my comrade support.
Mm.
But there has to be meat where an independent judge in court will sit and say there is credible information in this WhatsApp, there is leading and material evidence that talks to the merits of the case. And them, I don't think they will take that chance. I strongly believe that.
So you think there's a case?
I think there's a case to answer.
Cases to answer is probably the last thing that President Putin would like to hear. And the other day it was announced that everyone who will be attending the BRICS summit in August will be given diplomatic immunity. But I thought it's standard procedure that if you have foreign dignitary, I mean, you are a retired diplomat.
I'm not retired yet.
Okay, so as long as you're breathing, you're still a diplomat.
Yeah, I'm not retired. I may go back to diplomatic cycles very soon.
But as a diplomat, my understanding was when you have something like this, you extend that so-called immunity to everyone anyway. So with or without Putin, this would have been done. That's my understanding.
That is the proper procedure. In this instance, what Derek did, you see, now people know about that process and procedure because there's a Putin issue in the in the media. But the normal procedure is if you are hosting international forums, and so you do grant diplomatic immunity and privileges to dignitaries as well as state representatives that may be attending. Remember, with this, particularly with this BRICS summit, it's not only the five member states that will be attending. I can confirm now that this week, BRICS ministers are meeting and they've confirmed that five states will be attending that have applied for BRICS membership.
All the guys were busy asking us out on a date.
Yeah, and those five, apparently, they've met the absolute requirements, and which is Argentina, Egypt, Iran, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. But there's another 12 that have applied. They have not met the requirements. So those countries will attend. They'll be invited. It is common cause that they will be granted, one, the invitation, two, with diplomatic privileges and immunities, because they'll be traveling with diplomatic passports of their respective countries. But it doesn't end there. It also includes representatives of international organizations that may be invited. For example, South Africa as the chair and the host may invite SACU, may invite AU, may invite SADC and other regional organizations of interest to the country and to BRICS. So the representatives of those organizations, including the United Nations if they want to, they may have reps from the UN, and representatives of those organizations will also be subjected to those privileges. The only difference now is Derko went and gazetted that process, which people were not aware of before. They will just grant it. It is well within our international relations regulations, but they gazetted it. That's what it rose the eyebrows.
With or without Putin, though, this would have happened.
It would have happened. With or without Putin, would have happened. I think they're just tightening the bolts and, you know, closing all the loopholes.
Leaving nothing to chance.
Leaving nothing to chance. But look, there's a challenge and crisis now that the Democratic Alliance, the official opposition party in the country, has now, you know, done an urgent court application. Not for Derko, and this is something that we must explain to our viewers, not for Derko not to embark on that process. The Democratic Alliance became very smart. They said, you can go on with that process, but we are approaching the court on the basis of Section 98, I think so, of the ICC law. Remember the ICC law? We spoke about it before. When we sign international treaties, when we sign international protocols, we domesticate them first. We don't just take a treaty as it is. It comes to Derko, Derko takes it to the international law advisors, it goes to parliament, so that it should not contravene our domestic laws, and particularly the constitution. We do have the ICC law domesticated into South Africa. Now, the Democratic Alliance is saying, South Africa, the government, you will implement the ICC a law that you have domestic, because it is the law in this country anymore. Mm-hmm. You remember the last time I spoke about how Derko can invoke in the Vienna Convention on diplomatic immunities and privileges of diplomatic passport carriers, as well as sitting head of state. The ICC law, which is also our law domestically, it actually contravenes the Vienna Convention. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the call of the head of state in South Africa. This is one of the biggest tests of President Ramaphosa. It's going to be the call of the president to say, even if the court can grant DA permission to say, no, South Africa is obliged, because that's what the court will not say South Africa must arrest President Putin. The court will say, this is the law in the country. South Africa, you have to respect the laws of your own country. Then it calls for President Ramaphosa to stand up and say, am I going to arrest my friend, Mr. Putin, with what, the police or the army or the hawks? I doubt that will never happen. It's a pie in the sky. But I think with all this pulling of strings, South Africa is preparing for hosting the summit in August. I'm just worried that what President Mbeki hinted 2 weeks ago when he said the easy way out of this is to move the summit to another country, as it was proposed before, to say, let Russia host now, and then South Africa will host in future. It's too late for that. August is around the corner. There's a lot of logistics that are involved in preparing for such, you know, a summit of magnitude of this, you know, this size. But I still think President Putin will come. I will be at the Russian embassy in the next week or two to celebrate their, you know, a day, the Russia Day. And this is where information and things will come clear, because, you know, Russia television has been banned on our shores. But things will become clear. We'll be able to talk to diplomats and officials of Russia one-on-one to say, is this thing happening or not? Where I am sitting, I am convinced that President Putin will come to South Africa and will attend the BRICS summit, and he will leave this country, and we will deal with the consequences.
The aftermath.
Yes.
Do you think the West, as it is called, would be as bold as to say, okay, SA, you've been a bad boy, you are clearly in contravention of the Vienna Convention, and you're a bad boy, so no more AGOA for you?
Well, I not the Vienna Convention, the ICC.
The ICC, sorry.
Yes. Look,
the Rome statutes.
They will make noise about it. They will make a lot of noise about it. It will harm us if that happens. But who are the people who are saying that mainly? It's the United States of America, which is not a signatory to that statute. You see, so if this noise comes from the other countries that signed the ICC,
the other members.
Then it will have more impact. I don't think they will go to an extent of saying you are losing the AGOA benefits. I don't think they'll go to that push. There are more to lose in this change of the global economy and global powers. They will lose more than us. We will lose what we are benefiting from America. We will be harmed. But America stands to lose more, because once you start imposing sanctions, imagine USA that could not impose sanctions against the racist apartheid regime. South Africa never, the Americans never imposed. They had an embassy here. We had Ford here. We had Coca-Cola here throughout. When Pepsi, Volvo, and other countries that supported us pulled out, the Americans remained and supported the racist apartheid regime. And we are sitting in a supposed to be democratic state that is actually treating America soft and with kids gloves. I don't think they will go to that extent, but there will be some, you know, noise making and challenges that will happen through after. But I think it's a wait and see situation. I think we must tread on very, you know, carefully in dealing with this. We also do not want to burn bridges. We can see where the world is going. We don't want to burn those bridges. But I think I want to see how is President Ramaphosa going to handle this one.
And hopefully it won't be another commission of inquiry.
Oh, no, that will cost us now much more millions of dollars.
Botsang, I think let's wrap it up there. I think we've, unless you want to talk consular services versus police services quickly.
The Dr. Nandipa's case. Yeah, this is another thing that our followers have been asking.
Yes.
And they are asking on social media. I don't know. They must stop inboxing me. You know, they must write on the platform so that when we respond.
Oh, yes. It's not a private conversation.
It's not a private conversation. Yes. Everybody else can see what we are engaging about. But
unless you want to take him out for dinner, then it's a different story.
Not me taking them out for dinner. Them taking me out for dinner. Yeah. But this is, remember when Dr. Maguduman and Thabo Bester were arrested in Tanzania, we had a discussion about this, and we didn't focus on the criminal case. We focused on consular services. We focused on extraditions. We focused on deportation. We explained very well. And people are saying, now, Botsan, since you guys have said this was a deportation, it's an easy one, it didn't require the police and the courts, what is happening? Why is Dr. Maguduman going to court? And I said, we warned that the government must be very careful. If Dr. Maguduman in the Republic of Tanzania was handed over to the South African Police Service, then she's got a case.
Sure.
Because the South African Police Service Act forbids South African police to can make arrests outside the borders of the country. That's one element. But the Department of Home Affairs...
So how does it work with... We're working with Interpol. And as a police service, we're part of this operation within an Interpol context.
Okay. That could have been then an extradition.
Okay.
Because then the Tanzanian or any other country where this arrest happens, the local police will have to be involved, the local court will have involved, the local court must sit and make a ruling that this person has been on Interpol watch. He has been arrested in our shores and therefore is under arrest, and the Tanzanian police will hand them over to Interpol, in that, not to SAPS. SAPS has representatives in Interpol. SAPS is a member of Interpol.
Yes.
To Interpol, then Interpol will make a passage through to South Africa after the whole extradition processes. But this was not the case. If you recall, the case was this person was expelled from the deported from Tanzania by the Tanzanian authorities. And Dr. Motswale and the Department of Home Affairs were in the forefront of this.
Yeah.
They were very convinced that the embassy officials, this is another thing that is of interest. The South African government, in some instances, they have a police attaché at the diplomatic mission. If there was a police attaché, and that is an if, of the South African High Commission in Dar es Salaam, who was part of that, there's nothing wrong, because that person is accredited as a diplomat. He would have worked with the consular officials, the Tanzanian officials, to can receive their citizens. And we should also recall that by that time, Dr. Maguduman, there were no charges against her. That's why she's avoiding the bail stuff. So this whole process is to actually run away from applying for bail, because she is aware that she will not qualify for bail.
Yeah, but she can get technical.
She can get technical. That's what she's doing. She's being technical. She's been saying, but you have abducted me. So what should happen according to them? I don't say that's what's going to happen. What they are wishing for is for the court to say this thing was not handled properly. It was abduction. This prisoner in front of me as a presiding judge is here wrongfully. Release that prisoner. Then they will have to release him because it's a court order. But the government then what will do? They will release her immediately when she steps out of court and charge and arrest her. But then that will give her much more chance to can get bail in future, because the condition of the arrest are different at the moment. So it will now become, you know, you will need a lawyer on this platform to come and explain that technicality. But with regard to abduction, deportation, and etc., I just wanted to explain that part to say, if we believe and we follow what Home Affairs is saying, then the country is on the right position. But I'm just worried that the police were there, what was their involvement.
Yes.
And at some stage, the police minister stood up, and we laughed about it, and said, the good doctor is cooperating. That worried me. That was before they were brought into the country. Who was she cooperating with? That's a very important question that Maguduman, a lawyer, is going to ask in court.
And in fact, she's represented by Anton Katz, SC, and he doesn't come cheap.
He's one of the best...
On the continent.
Most expensive
on the continent.
International law expert in the world. One of the best and the most expensive.
Who's paying him?
Fresh, I've got my own legal who's and labor who's. I wish somebody, one of the lawyers, can volunteer to represent me in my cases. I can't afford 100,000. My good mother's case is going to cost millions. It's very worrying and concerning who is behind the purse in this Thabo Bester process. But there's a lot of monies. Magudumana's father, herself, the doctor's father, is a retired person. 10,000 bail, boom, the money was there.
Mm.
You know, so there's a lot of money in this whole thing, and it amounts to millions. And the country must be worried who is behind, who is the person behind the Bester saga. And that's something of concern.
And on that note, we're done. I think we'll call it a day. Botsang Muilwa is available on social media at Botsang M. He's got a book out. Where do we get your book?
Like I've said the last time, you can get the book and write to me on botsangm@gmail.com.
Yes.
My numbers are public, 083-884-7787. No funny messages, just for the order of the book. As well as you can go to my Facebook page and place your order there. And I'm Botsang Muilwa on Facebook, at Botsang on Botsang M on, what do they call it, on Twitter?
Yes.
As well as on Instagram.
Botsang, thank you very much as always. We'll see you in a week.
Thank you very much, Big Doc, and thanks to the viewers. We'll see each other again next week on Wow What a Week.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Don't forget to subscribe to the fastest growing podcast in Mzansi. It's all because of you guys. Shout out to AM Studios for hosting us. We love your facility. Africa Podcast Network, we are family. Pezulu Works for your cinematography. Our audio engineer, Otis the Flow Fraser, and our guest, Botsang Modimowame Muilwa. Shout out to our creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and our show producer, Keletso Modisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Until next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.